Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This is Newsroom Robots, the podcast where we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence and the news industry. I'm Nikita Roy, data scientist, media entrepreneur, and one of the many founders currently building their ventures at the Harvard Innovation Labs. On the Newsroom Robots, I'm excited to bring you insightful conversations with industry experts about how AI is impacting the way we do journalism. Joining me on the show today is Jeff Sonderman, the founder and CEO of Delta Flow Solutions. He's the former deputy executive director of the American Press Institute, where he created the metrics for news analytics software, revolutionizing audience data for over 200 news enterprises, and invented the Source Matters software to enhance source diversity in newsrooms. He has been a Media Transformation Challenge Fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School Executive Education and continues to blend innovation with journalism. In this episode, Jeff discusses his work on using AI to transform unstructured data from PDFs into hyperlocal news reports. We also explore how generative AI can streamline business operations across analytics, marketing, product management, and content accessibility. Jeff, welcome to Newsroom Robots.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
Jeff, we had a conversation earlier, and that's what got me very interested in terms of your experiments with generative AI. You've been delving deep into ChatGPT, using it for different sorts of works like coding, experiments with like images and stuff. So I'm really excited to get into all of that in today's conversations, because I think understanding use cases for generative AI is the key right now. It's such a new technology and it's so much that it can do. So I love having conversations with people in terms of where they're using it, where they see the power of generative AI in their work. And I really was interested in the experiments that you were doing. So can you share a little bit about how have you been experimenting with generative AI in your work?
Sure. I'm really glad to talk about that. I've been listening to the podcast and all your other episodes, so I'm really thrilled to have a chance to be here. Yeah, so I do a couple of things in terms of my work life. One is I run a consulting company that works with news organizations called Delta Flow Solutions. And so we work with a lot of local and digital news publishers in the U.S. on projects related to like business sustainability and how they're going to grow their members and subscribers and things like that. So I've really been leaning into finding ways to use AI in that space and bring that into some of the projects that we do. I think, you know, probably most of the people who are going to listen to this podcast are familiar with like the ChatGPT interface you get to online, right? Where you can go type into a box on your web browser and get a lot of cool stuff out of it. And I know you've had a lot of guests talk about those kinds of things. So I think that's great. But I'm also really interested in how can we apply this technology to create completely automated products or business processes? And that means writing programs that leverage AI to get stuff done in a recurring automated basis, like with no human at the keyboard. And so it's a different level of challenge and different level of testing and trust you have to build in to do something like that. But really, the key idea here is the like OpenAI services, certain APIs that you can connect to and use, where you can essentially ask prompts and have conversations the same way you would sitting at a keyboard, but you can have a computer script that you write do that. And so it's a great way to build software that takes advantage of these same AI capabilities for your business and your journalism versus just the cases where you sit down as a person and talk to ChatGPT. So one of the really cool projects I'm working on now, to give you some more details, specific examples here, is a project where we're working with a local publisher to try to gather a lot of different kinds of what we call like hyperlocal data, things down at like the neighborhood level within their region, and be able to then aggregate all of that, figure out which of it is about which neighborhoods and little pieces of the area, and then send out localized news reports for a bunch of different neighborhoods. So people can get, you know, the West Side report and the East Side report, and the people who live out in this kind of further suburban community in the county can get local stuff from there. And it's something, you know, that itself is not a brand new idea. There have been projects over the years to do like local data reporting, but they often have relied in certain cities where it was technically possible to do. Like Chicago has been a hotbed of hyperlocal data projects over the years because the city of Chicago was good about like providing data online where it could be scraped or downloaded, or APIs that you could connect to and like pull out, you know, basically like CSVs or structured data about your communities. And so you could do that. But the challenge is everywhere else is not Chicago, right? So what do we do in communities where there isn't like a really smart, savvy government that provides APIs and data files for you to download and use? And that's what we're really trying to figure out if we can do in this project. So for instance, one of the cool ways where AI comes into making things possible that really weren't before is we have local police agencies that put arrest reports and, you know, basically crimes and arrests online, but it's a PDF that they print out from like the system they have that manages arrest information, right? And, you know, PDFs are notoriously not great for doing any programmatic analysis of. It's just like a piece of paper, right? And so we've been building a process there to extract the text from these PDFs. Here's all the people and the case numbers and the charges and the dates and the times and locations. And then take that, and it's a really messy data set, right? Like the spacing is not good. There's no spaces between dates and names. Like in some cases, the lines don't even match up. So like it jumps from half the description of a crime to somebody's name and then the other half the description of the crime. So it's kind of all over the place. And even as a human looking at it, you would go nuts just trying to parse this out yourself. But you can feed that into ChatGPT and give it a really detailed prompt that says like, here's what you're going to be looking at here. It's these eight kinds of data. You're going to have to sort it out a little bit. It's not all in the right order. You just say like, this isn't great. And say like, here's what I want you to give me back. And you feed it in and it actually can say like, okay, I figured it out. Here's the list of, you know, the person who was arrested, the time, the place that it happened, all those kinds of things, which as a reporter would be really cool, right? It would save me time on writing up my police brief. But doing it in a programming capacity, what's really cool is we can also get the OpenAI system is to deliver that data back to us in a JSON format, which basically means structured data. So I can not only just read it in my screen, I can have my script read it and process that and then take it back into all the other hyperlocal data that we're gathering and then go further, right? Like geocode those addresses, figure out what happened in what neighborhood. There's more stuff beyond that. But as an example, right, like what this lets you do is basically create a universal API for unstructured data through ChatGPT, right? Anytime you have some stuff out there that comes out in a messy PDF or plain text or just scraped off a web page, and you need to turn it into structured, organized, standardized form of data so that a computer can do stuff with it at scale, you can put ChatGPT in the middle of that and you can do it automatically. So that's a really cool example. There's other things that come into play with that, like jargony text. So not just the structure, right? But like criminal charges and citations where it's like things are abbreviated and things use weird jargons and references that an average person wouldn't understand and you wouldn't just want to like print in your news report, right? Another one is like road construction work where it's like really weird descriptions of like what's going on here and why is this lane closed on this road? Well, you can put that raw messy stuff into the ChatGPT system and say like, take all of this and give me back a 1 or 2 sentence summary of why this lane is closed, like what's going on here. And it will say, oh, there's a lane closed on Route 1 because an electrical crew is doing work today. That's what you want to put in a news report, right? Not a bunch of messy stuff you copied and pasted off a web page. So it's really great as that middle piece where you can say, take things that came in one way, turn it into this kind of thing that I actually want to put in front of readers or put into my news script, and then like keep going from there.
I really like the way you framed it as OpenAI can be like a universal API for unstructured data. I think that's a huge potential for, as you were saying, cities where they don't have like structured data available for you to go and analyze. And so I want to get more deeper into kind of like the product that you're thinking of building. How else are you using AI? What other kind of data sources are you looking at other than police arrest warrants and stuff? Are you making it like a hyper-local newsletter kind of product where you're able to know everything that's analyzing the data around you and what you need to know for right now? What does that product look like?
Yeah, that's generally the idea. We're in like the early R&D phase of it. So we're more confirming what's possible and what data sources can we get to work, and then working toward what does the first prototype look like and whatnot. So like we haven't fully figured out all of the like what exactly does the product look like, but it's probably email is a big component of it. That's a great way to deliver these things. It might have a web component too.
What other data sources do you think are great?
Yeah, so there's some things that don't necessarily need AI, like local weather forecast, right? Like weather forecasting has gotten good enough now that you can get like a forecast that's different in one neighborhood than another one, depending on where you are in the country. Right? Like maybe the sun's going to come out 2 hours earlier, or if you're on the coast, you've got a really different weather dynamic than you do 3 miles away up in the mountains, right? So being able to tell people in very specific localities what's the weather going to look like for the next 12 hours where you are, that doesn't really need a lot of AI, although you can always like jazz it up with running it through an AI, you know, to describe it better. But then those other pieces that come in are like the crime data we were talking about. So like all these different local police and sheriff's agencies, who was arrested here, what were the crimes that were reported, those kinds of things. All the different traffic stuff that comes in, we'd like to be able to tell people where is there going to be a highway lane closed today that's going to cause you a problem on your commute, or where is the county doing road work for this week that's going to be a problem for getting to your kid's soccer game on time, those kinds of things that are really important at the really local level. If it's happening near you where you're going to be driving, you want to know about a big lane closure incident. That's one of those things where like, yeah, the data is somewhere out there, but it's a long way from that to how you want to present it to readers. So those are some of the things that we've gotten into so far. There's other stuff that we haven't bitten off yet, but is coming, like local schools information, school board meetings, and you know, what's your school board talking about? What's on your school's calendar for events and fundraisers and sporting events and stuff? And I'm sure that as we get into that stuff, it will be similar, where there's data online in an awkward calendar format or something like that, and you want to turn it into a news report or a summary format or something like that where it's actually useful to people and not kind of garbled. So AI is really great for all of that. Anytime you're in between what goes in terms of inputs, like a scraping of raw data, and then the outputs of a professional reader-facing news product, the piece that you often need somewhere in the middle is to interpret, transform, reformat that information. And AI is just really great for doing that at scale, right? Like you can do that. You could have a reporter do that. You could have an intern or a clerk do that. But how many of those people can you afford to hire to do what's actually really tedious work and repetitive work? And so like if we're thinking about doing maybe 15 different localities for this local news product, well, that's a level of scale that's hard to do with people. Like I could sit down and do one of them, but I don't want to summarize 15 different arrest reports in 15 different places and then write weather reports. Like it would be more than a whole day's job for one person. So to do those things with AI, I think is going to be really valuable. And it's a really great way to either save time or save headaches. And, you know, what's I think really important also to point out about that is like, that's not stuff that's taking away a reporter's job. I mean, these are things that you wouldn't be able to afford to pay a reporter to do. We're reaching into areas and levels of data that weren't just economically accessible to produce before. So I'm excited to really look at those things rather than try to just say like, how can we teach AI to write news stories the same way that reporters do? Reporters are actually pretty good at writing news stories. We've nailed that one. We've been doing that a long, long time, and we've got schools that teach you how to do it. Like, I'm sure there will be AIs someday that, with a perfect set of info and sourcing and stuff, can write something that looks like a news story, but we don't actually need them to do that. We know how to do that. I'm interested in the stuff where we can't do it right now, either technologically or economically, and that's where the AI is going to help us do better journalism for people.
Exactly. I think that's what excites me about the potential, is being able to cover certain like school board meetings, all of these police reports, and informing people with products that they wouldn't have had access to previously. And I'm wondering what changes then, you know, maybe you're able to generate stories and ideas. You're able to basically get leads from that because you're constantly processing this data. What's happening right now is we live in this data-driven world, but we have all of this data, but we're not able to process it at scale, analyze it at scale. And the investment that you're talking about, I'd say, is just like you R&D phase right now. You're investing all of this time, but once you have that product, it's going to be sustainable, like by sustaining by itself without having somebody constantly doing it, right? What do you see would be like the human oversight component when building generative AI products and building like this data product?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The human oversight, it depends a little bit on what it is you're putting out, right? So what is the sensitivity or the risk or the cost of making a mistake with the given thing? So like a police report, you don't want to misidentify the person who is arrested. That would be really bad, right? Because you're saying that somebody is accused of committing a crime and you don't want to say that's the wrong person. So in that case, you might want some human review, or another measure we might come out with is we just decide, you know what, we're not going to name the suspects in the AI generated report. We're going to instruct ChatGPT to just anonymize or omit the name. So you give us a report that says a 38-year-old man was arrested for vandalism on Friday night at this location. You don't say the name of who we think it was. And, you know, if it was a big significant incident, a in-person reporter will follow up on that and write a different story about it. But in terms of like the mass at scale roundup of a whole bunch of data, you know, maybe you back away from some things where you're like, okay, don't even go to the parts where making a mistake would be really bad. Another thing I think that matters a lot for in terms of quality and review is, what data are you putting in, right? So we're taking official raw data that comes straight from a police department, for instance, or from a county department of transportation for traffic incidents. And we're giving that to the AI system and saying, take just this set of 10 incidents, right? And restructure it and format it and interpret it for us, but don't do anything else. Okay, so like they say, like don't hallucinate other things you've ingested in the past, right? So a lot of that is in the art of prompting and like how we have to test and write the prompts to do this, which is to say, not just like, here's the data, please do this to it, but also what not to do. So we have to build into our prompts, you know, don't reference or include anything beyond the data that I just gave you. Don't abbreviate or transform any of the arrest information I give you in any way, right? So like we try to give it really careful prompts that say like, don't do anything you might think is otherwise helpful in a different context, but would be bad here. Because the system will try to sort of do things that it thinks would be helpful or save time or abbreviate something that you have to make sure it's not.
I think that's where prompt engineering becomes so crucial, testing out what your input is going to be and seeing how the outputs differ based on different prompts, right?
Yeah. And we're talking about repeatable processes, which also a good part of that is like, we're going to get the same format and structure of raw data from the police and the county department every day, right? So like if we engineer our prompts and test them really well and keep them the same every day, we're going to be pretty confident we can get the same outputs and be reliable on that. It's kind of different if you're reinventing a whole different thing every day. It's like, oh, here's a whole different set of data we've never done before. Just throw it in ChatGPT. Like that would be risky. But if you're using it again in a programming context where you go from some consistent every day, every week kind of input that you need to go to some consistent form of output, and you can test that thoroughly, I think you can hopefully, you know, we're still gonna have to test this, but you can probably rely over time that that is a pretty reliable way to go without having to check it every day to see if it's changed on you.
Also, what I was just thinking about is the same way maybe a human editor is going to be comparing what this PDF says versus what's said in the ChatGPT version. it's something that you could also code up in terms of tests, which is a very common thing that you do in coding, right? The same thing, if it's always going to be like data that is there, you can just compare the two. And when something is kind of like a false, that's when the human intervention kind of comes up and it alerts you that something is wrong. Because I think generative AI from time to time has the potential still to hallucinate even with the prompts, but maybe building in layers of testing that is traditional in building computer science like programs on top of what the generative AI technology could also be a way to mitigate that hallucination, right? Do you see that's also potential?
Yeah, and you could imagine even using further conversations with the same chat system to help you with that, right? So you could totally in a loop, right? Say like, okay, input, give me your feedback on reformat this and summarize it for me. And then you could take whatever it's giving you back automatically and run it back and say like, here's another prompt. Is there a potential for what I'm sending you here to offend anyone or to get anyone in any trouble? And here's, you know, just give it its result of its last prompt back to it. And if it says yes, either throw up a flag or punt or, you know, don't go forward with it, right? But like the same way you would ask an editor, hey, take another look at the story and let me know, like, if there's anything here we should be worried about or double checking. I think, you know, the AIs are actually pretty good at editing functions so far. I don't have a lot of confidence in them at first level content generation the way a reporter or an author would. But if you give it something and say like, summarize this for me, or tell me what in here somebody might, give me five arguments against the main point of this piece. What would a critic say about this? All those things that an editor would help you do and poke holes in and look for weaknesses in your arguments and things like that. You can actually rely on an AI to do pretty well for you now and have a conversation with you the way that an editor would.
And also it's having so many new features. I feel like every time I have a conversation, like it's always a new feature that's coming around. Now with ChatGPT, like having, you can use images as prompts, advanced data analysis, which is the new feature that was introduced a couple months ago, is currently my favorite feature just because as a data scientist, I know how much time it takes to like clean messy data and do that. And suddenly you have AI doing all of the code. And I think that's where the real power comes for journalists who may not, newsrooms who may not have data journalists over there. So how have you been experimenting and thinking about potential use cases with all of these new features that have come around?
It's really exciting because, you know, it is like every couple of weeks there's a whole new capability here. So the advanced data analysis part, I think, is really interesting, right? That's where you can give sort of a data set, a spreadsheet or something like that, and ask it to play the role of data analyst and tell you stuff or to make charts that visualize it for you and all those kinds of things. One of the other products we offer as a part of the consulting work we do is a product called Glue Letter, which is a newsletter analytics software tool. And that's one where we're actively experimenting with AI stuff too. And like for any kind of business intelligence or analytics tool, right? I think the ability to say like, yeah, here's what I would normally just put up on the dashboard or send out in a weekly report, but like run that same set of data through AI-based data analysis functions and say like, what do you see here, right? Like, can you summarize three things that maybe we should pay attention to in this week's trends that you think we should be talking about, right? It's not that it's going to come out and say like, here's your specific business strategy to follow, right? But if you say like, what do you think we should be asking more questions about here? What anomalies or outliers do you see in the data from this week's report? That kind of thing. So we have all this raw data in Glue Letter that we bring in from people's ESPs, right? So we integrate with like the MailChimps and the ActiveCampaigns and the Campaign Monitors and SendGrid, like all those major ESPs. We connect to them. We bring all that raw data out and store it in like a data warehouse of our own and then turn it back into insights for people. And so that's where we're starting to think like, okay, we have all this raw data about everyone who opened every email, everyone who clicked on every link, what the topics of each of those links were about, who clicked on what ads, all those things. And to take those data sets and run them through AI at scale and have it spit out a report that says, here's the story of all your newsletter engagement from this week, right? I think that's going to be really cool for people. And it's always the trade-off in analytics between, you know, you have data, but are you able to act on that data and make sense of that data, build it into decision-making processes, right? And that's the part where I think AI in the middle is going to be really useful for people, is to use that advanced data analysis capability to say, you know, if you're going to have a 30-minute meeting to talk about this week's analytics, here's what should be on the agenda, rather than you get in the meeting and you're staring at numbers then, and you spend 20 minutes not sure what to talk about, and then the meeting's over, right? So walking in better prepared with prompts and discussion points because the computer did some of the work for you, I think is really cool. Definitely the image analysis stuff, a lot of great potential for journalism. You know, one of the things that I think there's a big movement for among some corners of journalism now is writing better alt text for our photos or for our images. So that people who are vision impaired in particular, among other reasons, can understand what an image is showing. That's like what this stuff, one of the things that the AI system is great for. Here is an image. Describe in detail what this image is showing, right? And like really good alt text paints a visual picture for you in text. It doesn't just say like a man is swinging a bat, right? It says like a man in a red uniform is in mid-swing of the baseball bat and a crowd is rising behind him to cheer. Like that's the level of alt text that is actually useful to someone who's vision impaired to recreate that photo in their head. And really, how many people in a busy newsroom are taking the time to write that level of detailed alt text for every single little photo? And they're like, this is just not happening. And it's a big frustration for people. So I think applying it to things like that, write my caption, write my alt text. And yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
A human, check it, edit it, make sure it's correct afterward, but like, give me this really rich, thorough thing to start with, and then I'll pair it back from there and save me all the time for that kind of thing.
So what I'm really hearing is, I think that's amazing, first of all, because it makes news accessible again, all of these images. And we stress upon accessibility a lot in conversations that we have, but how many times are we having alt text in, especially like social media? How many times are we having alt text for all the images that are going in there? So really what I'm hearing is business operations has a huge potential to be kind of made more simpler and more accessible for people in the newsroom. Like if you can just chat with your newsletter data analytics instead of sitting through maybe like long presentations and figuring that out, it's more helpful. And so where you see the biggest potential, I'd say, for generative AI in the newsroom, it's, we've spoken a lot in terms of it's not really for writing the news stories. What do you see is the key thing that people could really experiment with right now in terms of generative AI?
Well, I'm really excited for what we can do with it on what people would might call the business side of the operation, I think. You know, it obviously, because newsrooms are content generating organisms, the idea of generative AI that generates content is a great fit, right? Like we love it in the newsroom. There's going to be lots of great things there. But it's also really useful as a business tool. And we're seeing that in all kinds of industries beyond journalism, where like every, you know, bank and every startup, everyone's out there trying to figure out how do we apply AI in our business. And I think journalists and news organizations would be wise to not miss that part of it, right? So a lot of the newer digital news startups that are out there around the country, which are fantastic, and it's awesome that there's so many hundreds of them, a lot are founded by journalists who have more experience and focus on the journalism side of it than they do on the business and sustainability side of it. That's just sort of, you know, the nature of what they know. It's their passion. They got into this to make sure the stories keep getting told because maybe they got laid off or worked at a place that closed down at legacy media or something like that. But the problem they face is like, yeah, I don't know a lot about running the business side of this necessarily. I don't necessarily have a lot of time to, and I can't hire 20 people to do that. Like maybe I could hire one or two people. So I think there's huge potential for AI to help journalist founders build up those business side capacities without having to hire a bunch of people or go back to college and get another degree, right? Like that's the big barrier, is how do I run this successful news startup without knowing everything, without hiring everybody. So if you ask yourself as one of those people, in an ideal world with unlimited resources, what other types of people and positions would I be hiring in this organization? And then make that list and then see how well AI can help you with some of those tasks. It's not going to do everything for you 100%, but there's a lot of things it really can do. Like just even in a ChatGPT window without advanced programming or anything like that, have a dialogue with ChatGPT to help you sharpen your customer value proposition, right? What is it we actually do for people? This is what I think we do for people. Poke some holes in that for me. Tell me what else I might be missing that should be part of this. Is there a more compelling way to state it, right? And now the language that's on your membership landing page to get donors is 20% better because you had this little short conversation with ChatGPT to give you better ideas about how to phrase it there. Really cool things you can do around like user research and personas. It's sometimes hard to go out and get real people to come in and sit down with you for an hour to give you feedback on your product, right? But you can tell your AI system to act as a certain type of person in your target audience. And you know, that's part of the prompt engineering is act as X kind of person and then do whatever I'm telling you to do, right? So if you say, act as a mother of school-aged children who lives in the suburbs of Cincinnati, right? Now, tell me about your daily news needs and your habits and what's hard for you to find out about. You can do that. And then you could say, okay, now you're a teenager who lives in the city and is going to high school and thinking about college. What are your news needs and situations that you face, right? So doing that kind of user research as a, you know, it's not as good, but is it 80% as good as you would get from real people? It would at least give you ideas to consider that you might not have thought about before. I think so. And you can do it at really no cost and very little time and overhead because you're not actually setting up interviews where people have to come in and you buy bagels, right? So it's like there's a lot of stuff you can do there. You can generate a marketing plan. Maybe you're one of these journalist founders. It's like, gosh, I need to market my site. We need to do better. Like go to ChatGPT and say, give me a step-by-step marketing plan for a campaign to promote our new product, including write posts for each kind of social media platform that will work there and be formatted to their length and style. And yeah, revise that a little bit, but like you're 80% of the way there, right? So I think those are the kind of use cases. You know, we're talking now nearing the end of the year. A lot of people in November, December are getting ready to launch NewsMatch fundraising campaigns in our industry for nonprofit news. Have ChatGPT start your writing your series of 10 end of year fundraising appeals you're going to send out, each with a different focus and flavor that you're going to send to your email list. And then, yeah, take that, spend an hour refining it. But compared to what I usually hear, which is people spend like 10 days writing and refining these things from scratch themselves, and it's a huge lift. There's all these kind of business side operations, marketing functions that we can either have done by AI or at least have a huge amount of help with from AI that I would really like to see our newsrooms thinking more about beyond just what can we do in the news report with it.
I want to add to that list, actually, because I think one of the biggest places where it's helpful is actually product management, especially if you're developing a new product. I've been using it extensively in terms of describing exactly what your product is, your vision, and it actually creates all of the user stories and everything. And all you have to do is like refine it, and it saves time and helps. If you are not a technical person and you're trying, and as a non-technical person, trying to give that vision to somebody who's technical, you need to speak their lingo, really, in order for that vision to be translated. And ChatGPT acts as that, I'd say, non-technical to technical like translator. And you're able to create that. And I see product management as well being a really great way to like play around with it. I think we need to keep on top of what other industries are doing and how they are using generative AI, because all of what they're doing also comes into our business, right? With the business side operations, as you're seeing. So we can really build on top of that.
Yeah, I love that idea. That's great.
So talking about building products, you've been a part of building AI products at the American Press Institute before your current journey, building Metrics for News, Source Matters. And when we were speaking previously, I remember you telling me that you were actually not at all in the tech side. You started off your undergrad doing journalism, and then you moved into that side of the industry. How was that journey then, building products at API, and kind of now you also call yourself a coder? And so how was that journey like?
I'll give you a bit of a story. From a young age, for me, I always liked building things. I was just something I was drawn to even as a kid. And understanding how systems worked, how things worked, taking them apart to see what's inside. I got one of my favorite toys as a kid was just this little set of like mini screwdrivers. The things that were small enough to take apart those tiny screws that are on the back of like your electronics toys, right? Like not the big screws, but like the little teeny tiny ones that hold the batteries on and stuff. Because I would just take apart every piece of thing that I had in my house and be like, what's in this? What makes that light up? Where's that speed? Like, you know, and I broke half of it probably. But I always liked seeing how do these things work, and then also understanding like, okay, so what went into the design of this? What trade-offs did they have to make? What constraints were addressed creatively? So I just love anything where we're figuring out how to make something work and how to build something. So when I was going to college, I was kind of torn between either majoring in journalism or majoring in engineering. And at the time, it really felt like it had to be a choice. I think now you can much more readily see a way to blend those things. But this was mid-2000s for me, and it was not really a way to equally serve both those things in one major or one course of study. I chose journalism. I went to the Missouri School of Journalism, and I studied journalism because that mission spoke to me, and I felt like there was a lot of creative potential in that. I think at our best, journalists have the chance to inform, delight, and improve the lives of people, which is just an amazing thing to be able to say that you get to do. And not so many jobs where you really get to do that level of, make that level of difference for people. Not everyone gets to do that every day, but like you always wake up thinking that today could be the day I get to do that. It's also really creative work where every day is probably pretty different. You don't show up and do the exact same thing on the assembly line every day. So I really liked that. But as I was working in journalism, I worked in local newspapers as a reporter and editor. I moved to DC for a digital news startup. So I did a lot of different forms of local journalism in my early years. And I always find myself looking at things kind of with an engineering eye still. I was always interested in the stories that were about, okay, but how does this system work and how do we explain it to people better? You know, more so than the 5,000 word narrative story where I follow a person around in their life. Like I could do that story, but I was not what I liked doing and didn't put my best energy into it. So I liked the stories where we were talking about how do you get health insurance coverage as a senior living in Northeast Pennsylvania? How is this system changing? Now, why are you paying more this year than last year? Like what's actually behind that? What's inside the box, right? And so those were the stories I would tell. And then as I was working in those jobs, we went through a huge amount of disruption and changes in industry. And so I started looking around and saying like, maybe there's more here than me writing stories. Maybe I need to start helping be part of the changes and the solutions that we're going to need at a scale for this industry. And so I worked at the Poynter Institute for a couple of years early on in that transition. I was a digital media fellow. And then the things we were really tackling were like the rise of social media. It was the early Facebook and Twitter days. And then the rise of smartphones and tablets when the first iPhones were really taking root and then iPads. And as time went further on, then I went to the American Press Institute. And at API, we had this wonderful chance starting in 2013 to really just reimagine a mission and say like, okay, so what does the industry need right now to solve its biggest challenges? And then how are we going to do that? Or how are we going to at least help do that or play some constructive role in that? Some of those needs were technological, not all of them. There's a lot of things that are just training, cultural, other things too. But some of those needs were technological. And we had a newspaper company that we knew come to us at one point early on and say, could you help us use our analytics to figure out if we're covering the right things? Is our content strategy on point based on what our readers are actually clicking on and spending time with and reading? And so we looked at their Google Analytics and, you know, tried to give them a feedback on that. And we realized quickly, like, that wasn't good enough. The data in Google Analytics for a news publisher is not really what you want because Google Analytics is not built for news publishers. It's built for everyone on the internet, including mostly people doing retail and e-commerce. And so we run it on news sites and that's nice, but you don't want a list of web pages with page views if you're trying to really decide if we're covering education the right way, right? That's a very different question. So I created this Metrics for News program because we needed something that was metrics for news and that was not Google Analytics used for news. And that was really the ethos, right? In terms of the personal journey, I had dabbled in technology and I'd built things for a few years before that as hobbies and things like that. But I'd never built an at-scale software product that was used by enterprise companies in business operations. That was the first time we had done that. So it was a lot of learning as you go. And there was a certain amount of, just ambition and we'll just figure it out because we want to do it. You know, we didn't know how to do most of the things we did until we did them. And that's kind of an ethos that I continued through a lot of my work in technology over the years. Like, the best time to learn something is when it's time to do it, not to necessarily go off to school for 3 or 4 years and get a degree in computer science so that you can then come back and get a job and do what someone asks you to do. It's no, what's in front of you right now in your organization, in your work, that needs to be solved? And is there some piece of technology or approach that's within your grasp to apply to it, right? So maybe you don't 100% know how to do it, but can you learn within a week the next thing you need to know to do it? If you can do that, go ahead and do that and build the thing. And it's going to be bad. It's going to be the simple bad version of what it could be, but it might be good enough. And then make it better. Or, you know, when the next thing comes along, now you know what you learned from that and the next one will be better. So I'm a big fan of iterative learning and doing real things as you learn, not going off and doing a bunch of like test hypothetical projects or building things that aren't real just so you learn in theory how the code works. But like, I think the first thing I probably built was a blackjack game in JavaScript, which was part of like a course that I was doing. But it was cool. I was like, okay, this took a few hours. At the end of it, I can play blackjack against the computer. Okay, that's pretty fun. Very simple, right? Like no cards, but just like, and so you start off doing that kind of thing and then you get better, you Google things a lot and you learn as you go, but always in the service of building something important, because I think that's what, one, it gives you the reason to actually do it, to spend more than 10 minutes on it, but actually spend an hour on it. You got to be building something that's important to you and to other people. And it also gives you the motivation. It keeps you alive when you've got a bug that you're going to bang your head against the wall for 30 minutes on because you just can't figure out what I did wrong with this, you know, this piece of code yet. And you're going to want to solve it because you know there's something at the end of that rainbow that you're trying to get to. So I think for me, that's been really important. So Metrics for News was part of that journey. We built that. That was used by, I think, more than 200 newsrooms in my time at API, and it's still going. I'm sure there's more on it now. Source Matters came along later. We added that in 2020. As we were looking for ways to better serve the industry's needs to look at the diversity of their news reporting and the sources that they're using. And we realized that the technology we had built in Metrics for News, part of what it did was automatically bring in all your stories, like import all your story content and run it through AI systems to basically extract all the people and the places that are mentioned in it. And we said, well, that's good for analysis, but if you actually want to do source auditing, part of what you got to do is bring in all the stories and find all the people in them, right? And find out which ones are sources based on the context of how they're mentioned. Is this someone I'm writing about or am I quoting? So we were able to leverage that technology and enhance it to say like, okay, we can find all the sources in all your stories. And then we can build an interface where you come in and you tag them for different characteristics that you want to track, right? So that was the origin of Source Matters. And then as I left API, which is about 2 years ago now, I was going off on my own to do this kind of consulting work and freelance work and do fun projects that I wanted to get more involved in myself. And a lot of the conversations were around email. A lot of the people were saying email is the thing now in terms of newsletters that drive our subscriber growth and our subscriber retention. It's hugely important for us as a strategy. And we know like disappointingly little about that audience for how important it is to us now, right? Like I'm sending out newsletters through MailChimp every day, for instance. And like, I get an open rate for today's email and I get a total click rate, but like what over time are the topics of links that people are most interested in my newsletter? And how is that different from this other newsletter? Like that data is not in there. And so because I kept hearing those questions, that's when I created the Glue Letter product that I'm really most working on now, which is focused on similar to Metrics for News, take all that raw data out. You can keep using MailChimp to send your emails. That's fine. They're good at a bunch of things, but they're not good at the analytics part. And so created a system that is bespoke to news people that helps news people sending newsletters what they need to know about their data product. And so I think, you know, in terms of my overall journey, it's really been this fusion of journalism technology. I didn't leave journalism to go do technology and then start like working for banks writing their software. You know, As I looked at technology, I was like, how do we bend this world of technology to journalism? So let's build Metrics for News. Let's build source auditing. Let's build email analytics, because these are the things that news people need and that honestly no one else is building, because they're not awesome businesses. You know, they're okay businesses. Like we're growing, we're seeing a lot of interest, but like there's not going to be a Fortune 500 company doing these products that we're doing, because it doesn't scale to 10 million users. It scales to maybe 1,000, you know, and that's enough, because it's those 1,000 are doing really important work.
Yeah. And when like VCs are looking at funding startup companies and tech companies, they're looking for like massive scale, and maybe news companies, the news industry seems small in that. And we have to just use like products that are made for a different industry and just see how it applies for newsrooms. So I really like the way you spoke about bending technology to see how it fits journalism needs. And I feel like that's exactly the moment we are in AI. Yeah, there's a lot of concerns regarding AI, but how can we bend it and kind of work around it so that it helps us with our own business operations, right? So that it doesn't exploit us in a way. If we use products that is not made for industry, then that's where it's not going to fit with us, and that product market fit will not be there for newsrooms. So as you were speaking, what I was really thinking about was the importance of data is going to be so crucial, because if you're going to build on top of all of these, like you're going to build generative AI or any products and you want to get insights, if you don't have the data, you just can't do anything. And so I think that's where it's very interesting the way you spoke about what you did at API and now as well, is building data for your newsroom. And I think that's like the most important part that we need to be focusing on right now with generative AI. You can't use generative AI really for business operations, I'd say, if you don't have the data to get insights from it, right? So it's very interesting the way you like brought it all together and your journey. And I really like that. It's been fun. We've gone through a lot of different use cases and really looked at, focused on what I think is the most important part, is ChatGPT for business operations. But also, I also love hearing it towards the end about how guests are using it in their own lives. So how have you been using AI or any fun use cases for ChatGPT in your own personal life?
I love talking about that too. So there's a term for this now that I didn't know existed until I started doing this and reading about it, which is I'm a solopreneur, which is an entrepreneur who kind of found something by themselves. So I was like, oh no, that's not just an accident. That's like a thing. And you know, there's people, I have friends and contractors I can call on to help with the project now and then, but I don't have like employees, right? So there's a lot of rough edges in a business like that. It's like, I got to wear a lot of hats, got to do a lot of things from day to day, switch modes a lot. And so AI is a huge help for a lot of those things, right? It's like, oh, I got to be like 10% self-marketing my business. I got to be like 20% client response and services and customer service stuff. I got to be like acquiring new business. So there's all those things where it's like, man, if I could do that a little bit faster and more efficiently, that'd be great, because I got like five other hats to wear today. So really using AI to save yourself time. Like one of my favorite things is just, if you got to write an email to somebody and maybe you're writing 10 emails in a row and you're really behind on responding to things, like AI can help you write that professional sounding nice email when you just don't have the time, right? So you go to ChatGPT and you say like, what I need to say is, I'll get back to you next week. What I would like you to say is, a very nice professional email that offers a personal touch. And then it'll give you the 5-paragraph email that's like, I hope you're doing so well today. I look forward to the next time we get a chance to talk. By the way, I'm not going to be available until next week to respond to this, right? It'll give you that, and you just put that in your email and send it. But you don't have to sit there and write that for 20 minutes. You just say like, dear ChatGPT, here's a very rude version of what I want to say, but very short and direct. Make this nice. And then I'll put this in my email and send it to someone, right? And so all kinds of those things, plus like things I was talking about earlier with what newsrooms can do, like, okay, like develop your own marketing plans, develop your own, you know, ideas about how to frame and pitch your software product to people, do some user persona discussions. I love, you know, I've talked to ChatGPT about frame it as, you are a newsletter editor who works at a mid-sized American newsroom. You send out 2 newsletters a day that you write personally, and you edit 3 other ones that your colleagues write. What are some of your biggest questions and needs that you have right now? I know some of that because I come out of news myself and I talk to these people every day, but like, it's not like I'm totally starting from scratch about what the needs of a newsletter person are, but like, it surfaces things that you didn't think of before or that you didn't emphasize enough. So like, even just checking yourself by asking AI to play the role of some of these people you'd like to talk to more often, and use that to supplement the actual feedback and user conversations you have, I think those things are super useful.
That's fun. Yeah, your personal email assistant helps you write up.
Yes.
And I think it also helps you brainstorm if you have to have a difficult conversation, right? And have it through email as well, like how you could frame it so that it's more polite.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're not great at writing sensitive, difficult emails, right? Say like, my colleague's grandma just died last week, but I need to ask them if their story's ready. Like, you know, can you help me artfully make that connection and like in one email? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, here you go. here's your condolences. Here's your, you know, when you have time to return to this. And then here's the question. Everyone's different, but you all have some moment in your day when you're like mentally fatigued, right? For me, it's like 3 o'clock. For some people, it's, you know, right before lunch or something. But like, those are the times you can say like, ah, you know, I just don't have the heart to write this the way it should be written. Let me not send it badly though. Let's like plug it into ChatGPT and help it polish me up for it. So that's not a super advanced use, but it's the one of my day-to-day ones that I find really rewarding.
Well, that's how it is part of your everyday life. So use it. Well, Jeff, this has been just so much fun. I feel like brainstorming use cases and how we could be adopting AI in the news industry, not to replace journalists, but really to how it could really help us with different sides of the industry where we actually need help in with like business operations and like covering areas that don't get covered just because we don't have the time and resources to do that anymore. And so I'm very excited to see the data reporting product that you're building and hearing more about that. And this has just been so much fun. Thank you so much for joining me on News and Robots.
Great. Thanks. And I'll be listening to the next episodes too.
That was Jeff Sonderman, the founder and CEO of Delta Flow Solutions. This podcast is made possible thanks to the Harvard Innovation Lab's Spark Grant. I'm Nikita Roy, and this is Newsroom Robots.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.